We'll proceed to case number 4, which is EEOC versus Lee's Log Cabin. Bruner?
May it please the court. My name is Paula Bruner, and I represent the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the appellate in this case. The commission believes that the district court's granting of summary judgment must be reversed because the evidence supports the conclusion that Ms. Stewart, was substantially limited by her HIV infection at the time she applied for a job with Log Cabin and when Log Cabin refused to hire her, and thus this ADA claim should go to trial. The district court's decision should be reversed because it rested on two improper grounds. The first being that it thought that there was some substantive difference between being HIV positive and having AIDS, which of course there is none. And also that the commission somehow changed its claim in the litigation between filing its complaint and opposing summary judgment when it clarified that Ms. Stewart's HIV status was AIDS. The district court also improperly thought that the commission should not prevail on its claim of discrimination based on Stewart's having AIDS because we failed to somehow show that Log Cabin knew she had AIDS. What is important here to understand is whatever label is attached to Ms. Stewart's condition, whether it's HIV positive, having HIV, having AIDS, or her HIV status, the relevant question for coverage purposes under the ADA is whether she was substantially limited by her physical impairment, whether her physical impairment, which is being HIV infected, substantially limited major life activities, which the district court conceded it did.
Well, that analysis will differ whether a person is diagnosed as HIV positive or has developed full-blown AIDS, won't it? The symptomology is different, and in fact, an HIV positive person can go for many years without being symptomatic.
Your Honor, once the person has AIDS, as Ms. Stewart did, since the age of 14, there is no difference between whether it's termed HIV positive
right.
or AIDS.
But this wasn't litigated as an AIDS claim. It was litigated as an HIV positive claim, and the two presumably would have to be analyzed a little bit differently, both factually and legally.
Not at all, Your Honor. First of all, this was not litigated as an HIV positive claim solely.
Well, what we stated the issue of her diagnosis as having full-blown AIDS came up in a responsive brief.
Yes, Your Honor. And what we said in our complaint at the outset was what we believed to have triggered what was the discriminatory act of refusing to hire her was the restaurant's knowledge that she was HIV positive.
And
at no point in our complaint,
that's all the restaurant knew.
I'm sorry?
That fact is undisputed, that all the restaurant knew is that she was HIV positive.
Yes, Your Honor. And if we're able to prove at trial on remand that, in fact, the restaurant acted on her HIV positive status or her HIV positive infection, that the fact that she has AIDS would still be embraced by that status, by the condition. You cannot have AIDS without being HIV positive. And so there was no deception, there's no new claim, and there's no gross departure as the district court contended.
But you can be HIV positive and not have AIDS.
This is true, Your Honor.
All the defense knew here was that this was an HIV positive claim, and so the case was litigated in that way. When you brought up the fact that your client has full-blown AIDS in a responsive brief, that was a surprise to everyone, including the district court, who said it's too late.
Your Honor, first of all, the failure of the defendants to learn the degree of Ms. Stewart's HIV positive status is their own fault.
It is not their own fault. It's your burden of proof.
It is our
and
burden
you submitted of proof. You submitted a Rule 28J statement that said this is an HIV claim. You were obligated to define the scope and reach of your claims in that statement, and you did not.
We submitted a Rule 26F statement that said that we believed she was a qualified individual with a disability, and we did not indicate at that time what the disability was. We said we felt that she had been discriminated against after Log Cabin learned that she had that she was HIV positive.
But it was your duty at that point, if this was going to be an AIDS claim and not just an HIV claim, to say so, and you didn't.
Your Honor, even if we didn't, the substantial, and we're looking solely at her HIV positive status, she is still substantially limited, and we did present evidence to that effect by way of her declaration and her treating physician's affidavit.
Well, the physician's affidavit came late, too.
But the court allowed it. The defendants moved to strike. That motion to strike was not granted. It is not discernible from the record whether or not the district court actually relied on it, but what we do know that was actually before the court, before the district court, in a timely fashion, was Ms. Stewart's declaration. And medical testimony is not required in order to show substantial limitation, but there was such medical testimony in this record. And what we still have is a finding that cannot be supported by the evidence, because the evidence in this case shows that Ms. Stewart was, in fact, substantially limited, particularly in the area of reproduction. The Supreme Court in Bragdon made very clear.
Can I just stop you right there for a minute? Is there anything in the case law, I understand what the medical testimony is, but is there any case law that says that HIV and AIDS are separate disabilities for the purpose of ADA?
There is recognition in the case law, none of which I've cited today because there is no difference here, that recognizes HIV can have various degrees and it not substantially limit a person. But in the Supreme Court's decision in Bragdon, it recognized that an HIV-infected person is substantially limited by the risks that are posed to the potential, in this case and in the Bragdon case, a woman being HIV-infected that desires to have a child, and the risk of transmission to that child being one of a public danger that is considered a substantial limitation that is not experienced by a non-HIV person in the general population.
But the court in Bragdon specifically cautioned that it was not laying down a per se rule, and
this
that it would
is
have
true.
To be evaluated on a case-by-case basis.
And this here, one was.
Well, not really, because your client had a child.
The fact that Ms. Stewart had a child does not at all eliminate the fact that she is still substantially limited in the area of reproduction. The Supreme Court in Bragdon made clear that personal choice is not controlling the outcome. However, it's whether the physical impairment, which in this case was HIV infection, substantially limits her major life activities. And as the court found, she is limited in the areas of self-care, relating to others, and reproduction. So it wasn't just simply reproduction. Also, the Supreme Court in Bragdon recognized that conception and childbirth is not an impossibility just because the person is HIV infected, and that the ADA does not contemplate utter inability to produce a child or the decision not to produce a child, but rather the substantial limitations on a person who does choose to produce a child. And so in that decision, the Bragdon court noted that even as in this case where a person who chooses to bear a child is taking antiviral drugs that will reduce the risk of transmission, which the Bragdon court recognized to be 8%, they said that as a matter of law, it could not be said that the risk of an 8% transmission is not a substantial limitation. If there are no further questions, I just simply want to
let me ask you about the issue of qualifications and whether Ms. Stewart was qualified. She indicated on her application that she had a lifting restriction and could not lift more than 10 pounds, and one of the job requirements was lifting, I think it's more than 20 or 25 pounds on a regular basis during a normal waitress shift. And she also indicated on the application that she could not be accommodated in any way. So isn't that fatal to the claim?
No, Your Honor, it is not. The question of her qualifications actually raises the triable issues. The evidence in the record established that while the position description did say that there was a lifting requirement, we know from the evidence that the restaurant, in fact, did hire a waitress who had a lifting restriction.
Her lifting restriction was dissimilar. She could lift and was not limited as to the amount that she could lift. She just couldn't lift items above her head. And so
yes,
she
Your
could
Honor.
Be accommodated, so that makes her materially different from Ms. Stewart.
Yes, Your Honor, but in recognizing that Ms. Stewart was 19 years old at the time that she applied, and she indicated that her lifting restriction was temporary, something that the employer did not explore, the ADA requires that in determining qualifications, the employer is required to do an individualized assessment, which this employer did not do. It never had an interview with Ms. Stewart to learn that the reason she said that her lifting restriction could not be accommodated was because her doctor said that she had to wait until her blood platelet count rose, and there was nothing the employer could do with respect to that. However, what the employer could have done if it had explored this further was it could have said, well, since you can't do any lifting, are there rolling trays we can provide? There are other accommodations that would have been available that did not have to, that could have eliminated the need for her to lift in order to perform the job, but the company did not explore that. Moreover, when Mr. Lee, the owner of the restaurant, was questioned about the lifting restriction and said, is it a requirement of the job, his response during deposition was not necessarily. Therefore, all of that evidence cumulatively creates at least a triable issue of fact. And this is a ruling on which the district court even punted, only stating that it was questionable whether Ms. Stewart was qualified. We also have to...
Let me ask you this. Is there anything in the record about why Lee's could accommodate the other waitress's restriction on lifting things above her head but could not accommodate Stewart's temporary lifting restriction?
No, Your Honor. The employer did not introduce any evidence suggesting that it could not have otherwise accommodated Ms. Stewart.
Is there any case law support for the proposition that when a job applicant says that I have a restriction and there is nothing that can be done to accommodate it, that the employer has a burden to go behind that?
Your Honor, the statute itself requires an individualized assessment to be done. And this
but based on what the employee or prospective employee is telling the employer, I have this restriction, it cannot be accommodated, and the employer looks individually and does an individualized assessment of that application and takes it at face value.
Your Honor, to the extent that it is questionable, even in this case, whether lifting was an essential function of this job.
We rely on the employer for that. We defer to the employer for that.
You can defer to the employer, but the employer is equivocating. The employer has said it's in the position description. The employer yet hires someone who has a lifting restriction, and the employer has admitted on the record that it is not necessarily a criterion of the waitressing job, all of which is a resolution that should go to a jury and not be resolved at summary judgment. This would require some credibility determinations, and also to the extent that Ms. Stewart's lifting restriction was temporary, and that was not explored by the employer, all of this weighs against resolving affirming the summary judgment finding on the qualification issue. If there are no further questions, I reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Moore.
May it please the court. Opposing counsel. My name is Terry Moore, and I represent Lee's Log Cabin in this matter. I believe that the biggest problem with the EEOC's case is that they're trying the court to say or have Judge Crabb's decision say that she was finding this great distinction between being HIV positive and AIDS. And that is not what the court's decision said. What the Judge Crabb said in her decision was she said that they're not synonymous. And because I believe, as the courts realize, somebody can be HIV positive without being at the AIDS stage. And in this case, and I think if you look through both the brief of the amicus and even the EEOC's brief, you'll notice that they talk about them as being two different things. They don't always talk about them being the same thing. And because they are not the same thing. And the Brangden case set forth the progression of the HIV virus. And in that progression, there is a significant period of time in which somebody can be HIV positive and not and still have an impairment under the law. The court said it's an impairment, but not necessarily disabled under the law. It's after that period of time that then the HIV virus goes further and the person then has a diagnosis of AIDS. So that they are two different things. They are not synonymous as what the court held. And I think when you look at the court's decision as a whole, you're seeing why that's important. Because when this case was sued out, it was sued out under an allegation that Lee's Log Cabin discriminated against Ms. Stewart because she was HIV positive. I find it interesting that they now claim, well, she's been diagnosed with AIDS since age 14. The EEOC, as they had indicated, actually had represented her in a previous lawsuit. So they would have known that she had been diagnosed as AIDS. If they had wanted to present this as a case where they were proceeding with a claim that she was diagnosed because of AIDS, they had that knowledge and certainly could have presented it as that. But they chose not to. And why did they choose not to? Because the only piece of evidence that they have that the employer knew anything about Ms. Stewart's condition was what was written on the application, HIV positive. There was no indication, and they've presented absolutely no evidence at any time that Dean Lee, who was the decision maker for Lee's Log Cabin, had any knowledge that Ms. Stewart had AIDS. And I think that's very important. kind of following through on that, had the EEOC had information or evidence that Mr. Lee knew that Ms. Stewart had AIDS, had been diagnosed with AIDS, that's the claim that they would have brought. Instead, they brought it as an HIV positive claim, indicating that what his knowledge was that she was HIV positive, and he therefore discriminated against her because of that impairment.
Let me ask you this. Doesn't the ADA really look at the effect a disease has on an individual rather than the name of the disease?
That it does, Your Honor. And that's what Judge Crabb did when she was looking at the evidence and making her determination. She looked at the evidence that had been submitted by the EEOC and saw that everything they submitted had indicated that these impairments, these limitations on her life functions were the result of her having AIDS. And that the EEOC at no time submitted any evidence that it was her HIV positive status that had limited her life functions.
Well, let me give you a hypothetical. What if Stewart had lung cancer and Lee refused to hire her and she sued? And if it came out that the cancer had spread to other parts of her body, would that be a separate claim of disability? Would she have to amend her complaint under those circumstances?
If she was claiming that her limitations were the result of where it having spread to different parts of her body, then I do believe she would have had to have amended her claim to state that, assuming that there was evidence that Mr. Lee made the decision based upon her having cancer in those other parts of her body.
So you would say that's a gross departure from the original claim?
I would say that was a gross departure, Your Honor.
Well, what if she was at stage 2 cancer and it developed into end cancer? Would that be a new claim?
I believe it would depend on where the cancer was at, Your Honor. In the court's first analogy, you had indicated it was in lung cancer and it had spread to different parts, and that the decision not to hire was based upon it having spread into different parts. If the analogy that you're now using is that the lung cancer was initially, in her lung at a stage 2 and then has now at an end stage, but it's still lung cancer, then I think that probably would not be a departure because now the decision is being made based upon that lung cancer, not cancer in some other part of her body. And I think that's when we look at the evidence. The EEOC, like I had indicated, did not submit any evidence that the HIV positive was a limitation on her major life functions. What they've tried to do now is to come in and say, well, wait a minute, look at what the Brangden court said, and that basically if there is a female in their child-rearing years have HIV, that it very well could be a disability. And I think, as the court pointed out, it is not in this case, because we need to look at them on an individualized case basis. In this case, Ms. Stewart did not have that as a limiting factor on a major life function. She did not, and this is where this case is significantly different than in the Brangden case. In the Brangden case, there was evidence, and it was unrefuted, that the decision that was made by the plaintiff in that case, by Ms. Brangden, not to have children was because she was HIV positive. In this case, Ms. Stewart went ahead and got pregnant. It was only after she was pregnant that she then consulted with her doctor about her HIV positive and the effect that it may have on her being able to have children. After consulting with the doctor, she continued to carry that child and proceeded to give birth to that child. So in this situation, her being HIV positive did not limit that major life function.
Let me ask you this. What difference would it have made to Lees in presenting its defense if it had known that Stewart had AIDS in addition to HIV?
Well, I think the biggest difference, Your Honor, is the fact that there is absolutely no evidence to show that Mr. Lee had any knowledge that she had AIDS and certainly did not make the decision not to hire her based upon, you know, something he didn't know. I mean, that's the whole part of the Ettering case, I believe it is, that this court handed down, saying that the employer has to have knowledge of what the disability is in order to be able to make a decision based upon that disability. And here, he had no knowledge of her AIDS. I would also go back to the pointing out that it's not the defendant's burden to prove whether there are limitations, particularly, you know, on the major life functions of an individual. It is part of proving the plaintiff's case that the plaintiff has to come forward and show that they're a qualified individual with a disability, and that disability includes not only showing the impairment, but then showing how that impairment limits major life functions.
Was there some problem here that Judge Grab had with the submission of affidavits and other information to support the motions?
I believe that the judge did have a real problem with the affidavits that were submitted by the EEOC. In particular, there was an affidavit that was submitted by a Dr. Goshens, who was the treating physician. The EEOC, despite the usual pretrial court orders that says by certain dates things are going to be done, and one of those dates is you're going to name expert witnesses, even if they're treating physicians, and you're going to supply the reports. Well, the EEOC didn't name Dr. Goshens. The defense had no knowledge that there were going to be any experts used in this case until they submitted his affidavit in response to the summary judgment motion. And I think that Judge Crabb had a problem with that. I believe there was also some issues with regards to an affidavit that was presented by Monica Lozer, I believe it was, who was an investigator for the EEOC, and that there were certain items contained in her affidavit that were hearsay, inadmissible type of things. And when the court went on to make her decision, she determined that she was finding the undisputed facts disregarding those things that were, in determining material and undisputed facts, I have disregarded those proposed findings of fact and responses that constitute legal conclusions, were argumentative or irrelevant, were not supported by the cited evidence, or were not supported by citations specific enough to alert the court to the source of that proposal. I also disregarded those proposed findings of fact that were inadmissible because they were based on hearsay. And then from that, she went on to make her findings. And based upon those findings, the limitations that Ms. Stewart has, the significant limitations on her major life functions, were based upon her AIDS and having the effects of the AIDS upon her. There was no evidence with respect to the HIV positive. And as I indicated, although the EEOC has tried to bootstrap that in, now saying, well, there's a restriction on her ability to reproduce, we can tell from the evidence that that is not the case. The one last item that I would like to touch on involves the qualification issue. And with respect to Ms. Stewart's being able to handle the duties and responsibilities that are associated with being a waitress at Lee's Log Cabin. There was a job requirement that the waitress be able to lift between 20 and 25 pounds on a regular basis throughout the shift. Ms. Stewart indicated on her application she had a 10-pound lifting restriction and that there was nothing the company could do to accommodate that restriction. Based upon that, there is no second step that the company needs to do to try to look into and discern what her restrictions are and how can they come up to change the position or to change their procedures to be able to accommodate it. I think her situation is significantly different than the other waitress. As the judge has indicated, first of all, the other waitress had a lifting restriction above her head. Now, that's certainly different than lifting, 20 to 25 pounds if you're talking about having to lift something above her head. Additionally, she also said, we need to talk about it. She had been a waitress for 25 years. She knew what it was to be entailed with acting as a waitress and certainly could come in and they could have a good conversation, come up with ways if there was some time that she would have had to lift something above her head, that could be accommodated. It's important to note that the requirement wasn't lifting 20, 25 pounds above your head. It was being able to carry bus trays, garbage cans, serving trays, those types of things, all things within this lifting restriction right here. I would also go one step further. And if the court would look at the affidavit that was submitted by Ms. Stewart, she actually goes on to say that based upon her restrictions, she wouldn't be able to do this job at all. She puts in her affidavit that at the time in 2004, which is when we're talking about, the doctor had not only given her this lifting restriction, but he had told her that she was not to have any physical activity and that she was basically confined to her home with frequent bed rest. Now, with those restrictions, if she is confined to her home with frequent bed rest, there is no way she could have come and been qualified to do a job at Lee's Log Cabin as a waitress. And therefore, there would be a qualification that she doesn't meet either. I think also one other aspect, as my time is almost out, as being somebody from that is northern Wisconsin, and although I'm not from the Wausau community, I'm from the Eau Claire community. I found it offensive that the EEOC would take a position that the people up north in Wausau are so uneducated that, of course, we have a bias against AIDS and HIV people. You know, there was absolutely no evidence that the Wausau community or any community up north has such a discriminatory bias. And I thought that putting that in their brief was actually very offensive. There was no evidence that there was any bias in this community. And I think that, as I said, I found that to be offensive. If the court has any other questions, I would be happy to entertain them.
No, thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Bruner? You have 2 minutes, Ms. Bruner, for a rebuttal.
I want to reiterate a few points. First of all, in this case, HIV and AIDS are synonymous. Once again, Ms. Stewart had been infected with HIV since birth, and had been diagnosed as having HIV/AIDS at age 14. She was 19 when she applied for her job. She had AIDS when she applied for her job. The substantial limitations, the evidence demonstrating substantial limitations.
One of my questions is, in your complaint, you didn't mention AIDS, though. You mentioned
HIV. We didn't mention AIDS, Your Honor, because we didn't mention what her disability was. We simply mentioned what we believed was triggering the employment action of refusing to hire her, which we stated was Lee's Log Cabin learning she was HIV positive, which they admit that they have knowledge of. I also want to point out that since they do admit that they had knowledge of Ms. Stewart's HIV condition, that this court in
Sangla... The second paragraph of your complaint says, when it failed to hire Corrine after learning she was human and HIV positive. Nothing about AIDS, though, right?
You're correct, Your Honor. I've never mentioned it. I've never said that we said anything about AIDS in the complaint. What I'm clarifying is we also never said her disability was strictly HIV. What we said, based on the application that she retrieved from the owner of Log Cabin, after she returned to find out why she wasn't selected for the job and came and asked to be able to amend her application to add additional experience, only to discover that her application had HIV positive. Scrawled across the front of its of the application, and she admits that she did not tell the assistant manager that she was HIV positive. So, however, the log cabin officials learned about her HIV status, whether it's because of this small community, the prior lawsuit, or as the assistant manager contends that she told him. The point is they had knowledge, and this court has said in Sangclap that the employer does not have to have an actual or professional understanding of what the medical condition is. If we can demonstrate they acted on the basis of the medical condition that they believed existed, which in this case was that she was HIV infected, that is sufficient to establish disability discrimination.
Thank you, Ms. Brown.
Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. Case is taken under advisement.